You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Jeff Hauser, head of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And both the Democratic response to the coming overturning of Roe v. Wade, potential banning of abortion nationwide, certainly half nationwide. Also, what the Biden administration can be doing at this point without any type of legislative pathway. Then we will speak to Jordan Flowers, co-founder of the Amazon Labor Union and the Congress of Essential Workers, on the recent win and loss, the Staten Island warehouses, where the Amazon labor union goes next. With that said, Christian Smalls, the other co-founder, will be headed to the White House tomorrow, along with Starbucks organizers and other union organizers from around the country. Don't know the last time that something like that happened. Meanwhile, protests around the country in the wake of the country becoming aware that Roe v. Wade is very likely about to be overturned as of June in this year. In Ohio, J.D. Vance, riding on a wave of Peter Thiel money, wins his election in Ohio, will face Tim Ryan, who won his election handily in the Ohio primary. Nina Turner loses in her second attempt to beat Brown for that congressional seat in Ohio. Meanwhile, people are wondering if the White House Correspondents' Dinner was a super spreader event. Speaking of Starbucks union drives, Starbucks plans to increase wages for non-union workers.
Huh. That should be illegal, I would think.
Well, I guess you can negotiate. It could be a tactic, anti-union tactic. I guess we'll find out.
Trying to bribe people, basically, honestly.
First U.S. Apple store to hold a union election will happen in a month. EU takes steps to ban Russian oil. U.S. job openings hit a record high point, 11.5 in March. The Fed hopes to discipline workers soon. DHS watchdog says Trump's DHS altered a report on Russian interference in the 2020 election. And sadly, for those of you who have been clutching on to that JPEG of me, the NFT sales market seems to be collapsing.
Oh, so sad.
Sam, I thought it was here to stay.
All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. It is, of course, Emma Vigeland's favorite day.
Hump day, right?
Correct. Yes, she coined the phrase, and it is. But I don't know if it's apropos this week, because in many respects, it feels like we're about to enter a period of a very, very long slog. Yeah. We're not on the other end of anything.
The whole week is uphill this week.
Yes.
Yeah. I will say that, you know, I'm happy to be doing the show because it's a welcome distraction. I might be staring at the wall. I was at the first Rangers playoff game last night, and it went to 3 overtimes, and they lost.
I was quite worried, actually.
Yeah, Bradley was watching on television, and yeah, it was a difficult night emotionally.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry about that, yep. Guys. Meanwhile,
but it is hump day, so. Yeah.
Meanwhile, there was protests all around the country in the wake of this leak of the Alito brief. A lot of speculation, again, still, as to where the leak came from, largely irrelevant. Although, I do think there's some implications if it ends up coming out that it was, in fact, as some are starting to speculate, that it was one of Alito's clerks that may have leaked this as a way of locking in those 5 votes. And we will get to that later. But the primary story is, of course, not the fact that we know 3 months early or 4 months, 3 months early that Roe v. Wade is about to be overturned, but that, in fact, it's going to be overturned. There are really 3 sets of reactions, 4 sets of reactions. There is the activist reaction. There is the Democratic leadership reaction, which thus far has been off base and anemic. I will read a piece of Rebecca Tracer's that outlines that. Then there is the reaction by Republicans who want to make this all about the leak. And then there is just simply a downplaying by Republicans of what this actually means, because they know this is an incredibly unpopular and frankly undemocratic, and we'll talk more about that, change to the basic rights of essentially half of our population in this country. And they want to pretend like it means nothing. Here is Joe Biden's response.
Leak has irreverently changed the court. Do you think that this leak has irreverently changed the court? We've never seen this happen before.
Well, you know, if this decision holds, it's really quite a radical decision. And again, the underlying premise, and again, I've not had a chance to thoroughly go into the report, the decision. But it basically says all the decisions relating to your private life, who you marry, whether or not you decide to conceive a child or not, whether or not you can have an abortion, a range of other decisions, whether or not how you raise your child. What does this do? And does this mean that in Florida they can decide they're going to pass a law saying that same-sex marriage is not permissible? It's against the law in Florida. So there's a whole, it's a fundamental shift in American jurisprudence.
Now, at one point yesterday, Joe Biden did say the word abortion. We didn't hear it from Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Because this generation of Democratic politicians have grown up with the idea that we need to treat it as icky. It needs to be the icky. Because if we don't concede the moral problems with an abortion in some way, as opposed to it being a medical procedure that a woman chooses so that they can have control of their destiny. If we don't like concede the moral problems with it, we're going to seem like out of touch, even though the vast majority of Americans believe that women should have the right to an abortion. Here is Mitch McConnell taking one of the 2 Republican tacks. One of them is to simply say, this is not going to mean anything. We'll play some of those later. Here is McConnell's.
And we'll, as far as I'm concerned, if we're in the majority, remain the case in perpetuity.
We spent decades trying to remake the court, overturn Roe. You're possibly single-handedly responsible for the 6-3 majority. So do you take personal credit for abortion rights likely to go away for millions of people in this country?
Yeah, I think the story today is an effort by someone on the inside to discredit the institution of the Senate, which continues a pattern that we've observed over the last couple of years. Leader Schumer over on the steps of the Supreme Court calling out justices by name. Sheldon Whitehouse and others filing amicus briefs threatening the court. Efforts to pack the court. Efforts to have term limits for court justices. What's unique about today is this is the first time we've had somebody on the inside try to attack the institution. Fortunately, I think the Chief Justice has taken that seriously and will find the leaker.
Leader McConnell, Democrats say that the prospect of Roe being overturned and some of the more restrictive trigger laws coming into effect without exemptions for rape and incest will shock the public and motivate voters in November. What is your response to that? How does this change the midterms?
Well, that's not the story for today. The story for today is what I just said.
Leader McConnell.
Yeah, there you go. The story today, and you know, we can talk. We'll talk more in the fun half about this question as to the potential identity of the leaker and the implications of the identity of the leaker, and the implications of the leak in and of itself. But the bottom line is, if you listen to any of the Republicans, and it is the case, even hearing reports from people who live in some of the most conservative parts of the country. The Republican lawmakers are not talking about this because they know this is has the potential to unleash an incredible amount of anger and energy on the political process, because we are talking about the denial after 50 years. Of a woman's right to choose in this country. Make no mistake about it. If we're not there in every 50 states now, it is just a matter of time. Just as this moment was inevitable, when you elect a Republican president, when the Republicans have shown that they're willing to keep one of those seats open. And just a reminder, you know, you hear anybody talk about the idea that abortion is a question that should be determined by democracy. Understand that in many of the states that you're talking about democracy, you have people voting for Democrats in the state legislature over 50% and being represented by only 30 or 40% in the state legislature. When you talk about democracy, you should know that Donald Trump did not win the most amount of votes. An electoral college is not a democratic small d institution. You had him appoint three of the justices, one of whom the seat was open because the Senate represented the power in the Senate during the Obama years, represented by less than half of the country, because the Senate is also one of our least democratic institutions, decided to keep that seat open. So democracy plays no role in this. Democracy plays no role in this. Democracy will not have an opportunity to address this either, because of the way the Senate is configured, the way that the presidency and the Supreme Court is configured, and in large extent, the way that gerrymandering has taken place.
And the Supreme Court is there, in theory, to protect rights from the whims of, say, if Florida wants to, as Biden put it, ban gay marriage. They're supposed to institute broad rights for Americans and say that this is the law of the land. Americans should, women have the right to an abortion. You have the right to marry whoever you want. You have the right to participate in sodomy, as Lawrence v. Texas said. Being gay is not outlawed. If the language in this ruling stands, and even if it is just like a concurring opinion or something like that, because we see how Alito's stealing from Clarence Thomas's dissents, they're given the roadmap to roll back all those things.
Yep. All right, we'll talk to Jeff Hauser in a moment, who I'm sure has some thoughts on this as well. First, a word from our sponsor. One of the benefits of ExpressVPN is not just the security you get when you use the internet. It's also, as far as entertainment, is also a huge boon. Watching Netflix without using ExpressVPN is like going to a casino and only being able to play on the slot machines.
Hmm.
Why limit yourself? The big money is somewhere else, as you know.
Not necessarily
for me when we talk about a casino. But Netflix, and people don't necessarily realize this, they have different content libraries for every country. Thousands of different shows, but without a VPN, you only get access to what's available in your location. So, for instance, I want to watch The Joker. I don't want to buy it.
Did you know that The Joker?
Yeah.
Oh.
The movie.
Okay. I just was surprised.
I saw it once here, but then I don't want to buy it or I don't rent it.
No, I guess.
I finally saw it, actually, recently. It's not bad.
No, I think it's pretty good.
It's in,
as you know, I live in the United States, but it's only available on Netflix in Australia. So, bingo bango. I hit my VPN app. I fire up my TV. I get on Netflix. And now, after I refresh, I can watch it in Australia. The Office. You want to watch The U.S. Office? Maybe I'm not going to watch it on Peacock. Because I'm not going to pay for that. But it's playing in Canada in Netflix.
Whoa.
So bingo bango. There you go.
I thought bingo bango was an Australian reference for Canada.
No, bingo bango works also for Canada. And the Ollie G show.
Oh, no way.
UK. It's on Netflix UK. It's not on Netflix US. Bingo bango. VPN. ExpressVPN. It gives you blazing fast speeds. You can stream in HD, no problem. It's compatible with all your devices, phones, laptops, media consoles, smart TVs, whatever you got. It's got servers in 94 different countries. You can gain access to thousands of new shows. You like anime? Yeah.
No,
I mean, I don't. But I mean,
yeah,
I know.
Others do.
Yep. Be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services. When you can get things like BBC iPlayer, YouTube, more, all, you can use all of them internationally.
Nice.
Stop paying full price for streaming services and getting access only to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/majority. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/majority to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. And just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You join the Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com. You not only get the free show free of commercials, but you get the fun half as well. And I want to welcome back to the program Jeff Hauser. He is the head of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Jeff, welcome back. I'm here with Emma Viglin.
Great to be here with you guys.
Yes, of course.
So let me just get, you know, I wanted to, you know, we had talked about having you come on. We'll talk about the Biden, you know, what we can do with the Biden agenda. But I know you have a lot of thoughts both about the Supreme Court. You were former DOJ back in the day, back in George W. Bush's day. I know that you also have some very strong opinions about the Democratic leadership and the way that they address these type of things. So let's talk about that. I mean, I don't want to spend too much time speculating about the leak, but what about the implications of the leak? What do you think is what difference does it make that we know about this draft brief now as opposed to, well, I'm not knowing about it now?
Well, I think that the impact of the leak is to potentially slightly erode the erosion of Supreme Court integrity and the view of the Supreme Court by the American people. This decision, which I suspect will be the same in a month and a half, now exists in a strange mathematical state of very likely, but not quite certain. And so there is no longer going to be novelty if and when, I think it's a matter of when, the Supreme Court ends Roe v. Wade. But the certainty will not come at the same time as the novelty, which is what normally happens with a Supreme Court opinion. And so I think to some extent, the reason why I suspect this leak came from the majority was to minimize the degree of backlash against the Supreme Court. However, we all can frustrate that plan by sustaining our anger at the Supreme Court and not just making it a 24-72 hour news cycle, but making it one of the key motivators for center left and progressive organizing for the years to come. The Supreme Court has been a rogue institution for multiple decades. As you alluded to, I worked at the Department of Justice under George W. Bush. The reason I was working under George W. Bush was I thought Al Gore would not only win the election, but would be inaugurated. And then Bush v. Gore and a lot of other shenanigans in the state of Florida occurred. And it ended up that George W. Bush was president. And I got stuck doing 2 years and 2 days under John Ashcroft, which is a long story for another day. But the basic point is Bush v. Gore should have taught the American people that the Supreme Court is a low integrity institution. However, I think the right has just been constantly angry at the Supreme Court, going back to school prayer and Brown v. Board of Education and continuing about Roe v. Wade. And I think it's going to take this reversal of Roe v. Wade to really shake up American politics and make center left and progressive people, the main people, angry at the Supreme Court. And I think if we all get appropriately angry at the Supreme Court, that opens up the opportunity for real change in the next decade.
Jeff, let me just do this for you for one moment.
Only God, no other king. Let the mighty eagles soar.
That was your former boss, John Ashcroft. And it's very rare that I have the opportunity to play that and people understand what's going on there. So I just wanted to do that.
Singing?
For your
bit.
Yes,
singing?
That was John Ashcroft singing Let the Mighty Eagle Soar.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
To have prayer lunches with staff at the Department of Justice, or prayer breakfast, excuse me.
If I remember correctly, he also put sheets on some statues that were bearing the bust of a woman. Is that right?
Yes, there were like Greek or Roman statues at the main justice building that had bare breasts, and that was considered far too provocative by Attorney General Ashcroft.
I just want to make this point, and we're going to get into this later, but Rebecca Tracer has written a wonderful piece about this, where the response from the Democratic leadership has been, this is a function of the Trump, Republicans. And I think that, like, as you're talking about 20 years ago, the chief law enforcement officer of the country was covering up the busts of Greek statues. This is not a function of Donald Trump. This is a function of a 50-year program by the Republican Party and the conservative movement. I saw just a headline of Bret Stephens writing in the New York Times today. This is not conservative. This is radical. This is the sine qua non of the conservative movement, the everything that is embodied in the suppression and oppression of women's rights is an extension of their entire political project.
Yeah. In the post-World War II era, the economic conservatives, the plutocrats in America, made a series of alliances with far-right Christian theocrats, which obviously is not meant to paint a broad brush of Christians, but of people who are, in fact, not just Christian, but theocrats, obviously a minority. And they've made an alliance. It's been ever-deepening alliance, and this is the fruition of it, just as much as another potentially cataclysmic Supreme Court case involving the rights of the Environmental Protection Agency that could come down in the next 4 to 6 weeks from the Supreme Court. I think this term of the Supreme Court is going to underscore why this unholy alliance emerged between theocrats and plutocrats, and the rest of us are going to have to organize like heck to get out from under them.
And we should say that EPA ruling is going to deal with possibly an assault on the Chevron doctrine or an imposing of the non-delegation principle, which would effectively prevent our government from protecting us from polluters, poisoners. It could essentially kneecap the ability of the government to serve the people and, against the interests of corporations and capitalists who want to privatize their profits and socialize their costs, which means that's on us. All right, let's just pivot a little bit to let's talk something specifically about the Revolving Door Project, just because we have a co-founder of the Amazon Labor Union coming on after you. There are union organizers headed to the White House tomorrow. I would say the two areas, and get your assessment of this, where the Biden administration is doing pretty well, particularly in terms of personnel, is the National Labor Relations Board and sort of these union issues and on antitrust and the Federal Trade Commission. But there is a problem with the Democratic leadership. I think that is exemplified by the fact of the involvement of the Global Strategy Group. Will you talk about that? I mean, we talk about the Revolving Door Project, right? I mean, this is – on one end of that revolving door is the Global Strategy Group, I would imagine.
Yes. The Global Strategy Group is one of the most important consulting firms that is associated with the Democratic Party and center-left institutions. It hires among the best regarded pollsters and other political operative types. And they earn their reputations by doing campaign work. But the way they really earn their big money is that in between the peaks of election seasons, their stable client base becomes increasingly corporate. And Global Strategies Group has been one of the most conspicuous in taking on corporations whose actions are most at odds with the agenda of the Democratic Party. And that includes that the Global Strategy Group has been working, advising Amazon on how to try to fight the union at Amazon, the Amazon Labor Union. And obviously they were unsuccessful on Staten Island, thank God. But it is institutions like Global Strategy Group giving insight to corporations into how to influence Democratic politicians that it's just invaluable, especially in blue cities, like a place like New York City, blue states like New York State, and even within the Democratic administration, because Joe Biden relied on Global Strategy Group for a lot of his polling. And I don't know that the effects are directly in the case of lobbying. There definitely can be lobbying. But I think what's more pernicious and widespread is just an understanding, detailed understanding of who are the people who have the levers of power in a Democratic administration, giving strategy on how to influence them. And then on the other hand, telling your clients to not fight against your clients without necessarily disclosing the conflict of interest. So if you wonder why do Democratic politicians not talk about enforcing laws that are being broken by corporations, we've done polling with Data for Progress on this. It is incredibly popular across all political categories, Democratic, Republican, or non-aligned, for the government to crack down on corporate criminality. Everyone knows corporate criminality is rife. They know it's a problem, and no one really will stick up for them. The polling numbers are off the charts. And if you're trying to think about why does the government not do anything about it, well, it could definitely hurt the odds of the government saying, hey, maybe we should crack down on corporate scofflaws that might improve our polling. If your pollster doesn't bring that up as an option, if the corporate pollster doesn't poll, what will it be like if Joe Biden picks a fight directly with Jeff Bezos? So while it's very good and it is a break with recent American political history that Joe Biden is going to be meeting with these organizers, and I applaud Biden and Walsh and others for bringing about that meeting, I also want to see this be not just about supporting workers, but fighting against plutocrats who are trying to break unions. Howard Schultz at Starbucks, it just came clear, is openly violating labor law and saying that he's going to pay unionized workplaces less money than non-unionized workplaces. That just broke this morning. Like, we need Joe Biden to fly out to Seattle and stand outside Howard Schultz's home and pick a fight with him. We need to see Democrats battling on behalf of working people. And I don't think that that is likely if their pollster is being paid by the plutocrat. So Democrats should use pollsters and operatives who are focused solely on the Democratic Party and progressive ends, rather than dipping their toes into the very rich water of corporate work.
And how many people working at the White House or in the staffs of the Senate, Democratic Senate offices or congressional offices, how many of them anticipate sending their resume to Global Strategy Group at one point in the next, I don't know, 6 to 48 months? I mean, this is where they're coming from, right? I mean, this is the problem, is that we had this with the Obama administration, that all of the top figures in the Obama administration go into these gig economy jobs. And then all of a sudden, like, the idea of like holding Uber to account for the way that it treats workers is just like off the table. There's no one there to do this.
Yeah, I mean, we at Revolving Door Project have been particularly focusing on Anita Dunn, who is about to begin her third distinct stint in the Biden White House. I mean, you might say, isn't the Biden White House only barely more than a year old? And yet she's going to begin her third distinct stint. She is one of the name founding partners at SKDK, Knickerbocker, which is one of the largest Democratic consulting firms. I think a firm that actually often collaborates with Global Strategies Group. And her protégés have been moving in and out of the administration as well, a little bit younger, a little less senior, but still quite influential figures. This has become the expectation that if you succeed in politics, that you cannot survive on a nonprofit salary or the nonprofit equivalent, that you need to be making serious coin. And the way you make serious coin, you can't do that just working on Democratic politics. And so long as we have people who are in Democratic politics so that they can make $500,000 a year or more eventually, you're just not going to see the Democratic Party be as populist as it can and should be.
And so to be clear, when you say third distinct service at the White House by Dunn, she's like in for 2 months, back at work for 2 months, back at work, back at SD Knickerbocker, and then back, like, are they, is like, have you incorporated her into your logo for the Revolving Door Project?
No, but we've spent a lot of time hammering down to make sure we understand all the different implications. So she was hired as what's called a special government employee at the beginning of the Biden administration, which means that she was hired with an expectation that she would work fewer than 130 days. As we predicted to people before 130 days was up, she spent rather more time there. She hit around, 225 days roughly. But by working as a special government employee, she had fewer revolving door limitations on her work. She also artificially suppressed her salary, which we also predicted and was worked with the Washington Post on this before the salary data came out in the Biden White House. So she took a salary a couple $1,000s less than what would have required her to make her past clients at SKDK public. It was totally manipulative. She then returned for a week in March of this year, and now it's been reported that she is coming back. I don't know if she is literally in the building yet as of today, but that she's going to be coming back at some point, I believe in the month of May, to work on beginning to prepare the administration for Republican subpoenas and the like. And I don't know if she's going to be hired as a full-time employee or not, but we have urged the administration to compel her to sign ethics agreements that would treat her just the same as any figure of comparable seniority and not allow her to play these sort of games to do an end run around the ethical obligations of senior White House staff.
Shouldn't be a function of the dollar amount. I mean, that's like, you know, I don't know, Rush Limbaugh taking out $9,999 so he could go buy his OxyContin, I think, at the time, and not have it the bank trigger the
right.
The reporting requirements. All right. Well, so, okay. Let's just pivot to the idea, and we just have a couple minutes left here, and we really should have you back to talk more about these things. But what at this point, now that Joe Biden's legislative agenda is dead, we all know, I think, that Biden has the legal authority, although the memo outlining this has been completely redacted because of, I guess, it's top secret, forgive student debt. And that seems to be being deliberated at the White House. They're just deciding how much can we shoot ourselves in the foot by making this means tested so that it steps on our own message and gives us no political value in doing it. But what else can the Biden administration do at this point, both from a, you know, an important policies perspective, but also for a political sense, like, you know, something has to happen between now and the fall, unless the Democrats want to get slaughtered.
Yeah, I mean, we are thinking about supply chain and inflation issues as a paradigmatic example where the executive branch needs to both substantively put as much pressure on corporate America as possible, and politically to be seen as fighting for consumers against corporate price gouging. The shipping industry, that is like the people, the consortiums that move boats around the world, they made more profits in 2021 than they had by far in the decade previously. Massive windfall profits. And they've been making no obvious investments to increase supply so that goods could move more freely and more cheaply. And they say, well, it's ephemeral, so why would we invest? And then anti-monopoly people said, well, why would we allow the 9 main shipping companies in the world to form into 3 consortiums and allow them access to pricing information so that they can bid rig together? And there's never been a good answer on that. Well, the new estimates I've read this morning in Bloomberg suggest that from $200 billion of international shipping profits in 2021, it's going to be $300 billion in 2022, and they expect it to exceed $100 billion a year for the foreseeable future. We need the Federal Maritime Commission to do something about this. We need the Department of Transportation, which does not include the Federal Maritime Commission for international shipping, but has jurisdiction over domestic boats, that is boats between American ports, as well as considerable aspects of our rail and trucking system. We need Pete Buttigieg to do his job, which is not to be seen having lunch with people, but is to make the transportation system in this country work. We need the Agriculture Department to go after price gouging by meat packers and other industries. We need to see the Health and Human Services go after big pharma. There are all sorts of ways to go after drug prices. We need substantive fights on these matters, and we also need to be caught publicly fighting. You're not necessarily going to get results between now and November on all of these fronts, but you can be seen fighting, and that's what the administration needs to be doing. They need to fight corporate greed on behalf of the ordinary American.
And frankly, you know, unless our government does these things, it's going to be harder to tell that the Supreme Court has taken away the ability of our government to do these things. You know, if they're inert as it is now, inactive rather, we're not going to see the loss of what the government could do.
FDR tried stuff with an adverse Supreme Court for the first 5 years of his administration. And he was unafraid to lose at the Supreme Court and then weigh in against the Supreme Court. The Biden administration needs to try to do the right thing. And they're going to run into obstacles. Joe Manchin's an obstacle, and so is Sam Alito. We can't pretend otherwise. That doesn't mean he's going to succeed in all regards, but he has to try, because you're not going to win any fight that you fail to begin. And you're not going to, the way you can win by losing if you are seen fighting for the right people and against the right villains.
Jeff Hauser, head of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic Policy Research. I read the stuff that you guys put out all the time. I really appreciate you coming on. We'll have you back on again soon.
It's my great pleasure.
All right. Let's bring in Jordan Flowers. He is the... Oh, we need to take a quick break. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Jordan Flowers, the co-founder of the Amazon Labor Union, the Congress of Essential Workers. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. I want to welcome to the show Jordan Flowers. He is the co-founder of the Amazon Labor Union and the Congress of Essential Workers. Jordan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, so far on Staten Island, a bit of a mixed bag. Won the first election in the first warehouse. Lost the second one I guess it was Monday, the LDJ...
LDJ 5.
LGD 5. Okay. So, all right, let's just lay out for us, and then we'll sort of go backwards on this. But what was different with the first organizing effort and the second organizing effort to get a sense of, like, you know, why a vote in one part of a Staten Island warehouse would work as opposed to another one?
So our core team of ALU workers are mainly from JFK 8. We have about 5 or 6 co-workers of LDJ 5. They actually, so Amazon Tennessee, they had union busting, and they sent them over to LDJ quicker than JFK 8 because we won that facility first. So they already were examining our work, and they were expressing the fact that, again, we're not a great union, we're not an official union. But again, we had our first victory April 1st, 2022. You know, it's just the union busing tactics that they had, what is it, expressed to the workers in LDJ 5, especially that they're part-time, that it was easy to get to them because they worked shorter shifts.
And there's a higher percentage of part-time workers at the second, again,
LDJ 5.
LDJ 5 than there are at JFK, right? I mean,
correct.
Yeah. Okay. So that played into their hands a little bit, right?
Well, give us a sense. I'm curious as to, like, you know, what it is when you're approaching part-time workers. What is their perspective? How is that different than? I mean, you know, maybe it's somewhat obvious, but I don't think it necessarily is. But what did you find when you were engaging these folks?
So again, LDJ focus part-time. They only work 4 hours. They work only 4 hour shifts. JFK 8, they work 10 to 12 hour shifts. So they're less on their feet, and most of the time they're only in and out. So again, they're on a quicker schedule than JFK 8, where we stay longer. So again, the moment these workers coming into LDJ 5, union buses are already on it, and again, it's right in and out. It's an in and out process for them. And
So you don't have the same opportunity to talk to them because they're on premises so little. Do they also have a different perspective towards their jobs insofar as, like, this is just a short time thing for me and I don't want to rock the boat and just get in and out?
No. So they still do some of the same labor as JFK, but it's just in a smaller amount of time because it's a sort center. So we're really just sorting more items instead of JFK where we're packing and shipping out. So, again, it's easier to talk to workers that are only working there for 4 hours because they're not really experiencing the work they're really experiencing in JFK. So it's still two different settings. It's still the same company. It's just that since they work shorter time, they don't have that much issues, but it's easier to, again, to get someone that only works a 4 hour shift than express to someone that works extended 12 hour shift.
Okay. And so what do you guys, what next? Now, I know some of you heading to the White House tomorrow. What is the relevance of that for the ALU?
We're actually heading out there today. I was going to be there myself, but I ended up staying home. So the importance of that is, again, this is a workers-led union. So this is Tier 1 and Tier 3, Chris Bowles and the management. This shows workers' power that came together and, you know, wanted to see a change in their facility. And, you know, being that it really started out with TCOEW, the Congress of Essential Workers, which was 4 of us. And then we had Brett Daniels, Connor Spence, and Jason Anthony, and Christian Martinez, then joined on later on. That, you know, again, these workers we know on a daily basis. And we've been there since opening day. We experienced the 60-hour shifts, the double mandatory overtime. That, you know, it's well aware that these workers, so it's been open for 6 years. These workers are well known that, you know, it's a safe facility and that it needed to be a change. So again, coming with ALU, we formed it as a workers led and, you know, successfully got the union this year, April 1st, 2022.
And so, what's the value though? I mean, to you guys, to have like, the White House sort of like recognize what you're doing. Does it have any value?
It has extreme value. Again, you know, we're dealing with almost a $1 trillion company, and they're still not even trying to acknowledge us. But again, the White House is a major thing that, you know, seeing that work is coming together again to make a change for their facility and to see the president, the vice president see a change that, you know, again, it's for the people. And, you know, it's really, I could say, how can I put it? It's a very great moment. I should just put it as it's a really great moment, especially that it's the White House. So for us to be invited And, you know, to see all this, it shows that, again, regular workers can make a change in their facility and that, you know, everyone's watching.
Could you have ever imagined that this would be the outcome? Like, when you guys first started organizing, and of course, I'm sure you hope for the best, but the fact that it's been this massive story and it's been seen as this huge victory in a sea of other labor and organizing efforts, could you have ever foreseen, I don't know, getting invited to the White House, for example?
I would say no, for one, because again, we're still building the ALU and we're still, you know, fighting for workers right now. So, I mean, again, for the White House to invite us, that shows you how big we are, and that shows you how successful and how much of a fight we're putting up at Amazon. And to be recognized by the White House is amazing.
I want to talk about going forward, but I want to go back a little bit too. I mean, when you got together and you set up the Congress of Essential Workers, obviously this was taking place with the backdrop of COVID. Because prior to that, we didn't recognize that there were any essential workers, and it was a way of saying, like, we're willing to let you get COVID and be on the front line of getting COVID so that we can stay home and have our packages delivered or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Will you talk about, like, what was your perspective towards unions prior to the time that you started whatever the initial conversations were you have where you were like, we need protections? Like, I'm curious as to what that journey looked like and how you came to say, like, we can set up our own union.
So actually, I have two incidents with Amazon when they fired me. So for anyone who doesn't know, I have lupus nephritis, which is an immunocompromised illness. Both my kidneys failed. I'm 23. I actually started at Amazon at the age of 19. So back in 2018, yeah, I was 19. That was my first full-time job. The union question, I've been part of a union because of my mom. She's a registered nurse, so she had $11.99. So I was getting the perks of a union. This is my first actual ever union working with, so I'm still growing and learning. But otherwise, Gerald Bryson told me more about unions, and he went into more depth because Amazon fired me due to my medical issue the first time, and it wasn't a proper leave. So they ended up terminating me. I had to fight for my job back, and I ended up getting it back. And then again, when COVID came around, before TCOEW, before ALU, Amazon was already fighting with me because of my health issues. They, May 1st, 2020, they decided all Amazon workers should come back to work. And in my case, I can't because Amazon workers are testing positive at hundreds of rates. That's almost a day-to-day. And we're talking about thousands of workers in this facility walking in and out. So they're not even catching up with numbers on COVID. So I wasn't going to risk my life to be in the facility. And I'm my mom's only son. And being that I have an immunocompromised, I could be in a ventilator in a hospital. I could be anywhere sick as a dog. And I don't want that for myself. And again, so Amazon fired me June 15th, 2020. I also think that was due to organizing and rallying and protesting. I think that they didn't care about my medical issues. So now again, Amazon has workers with disabilities. They're not being accommodated right now as we speak. That, you know, these workers are testing positive, being sick, and they're not being taken real care of. One worker, her name is Pushawn Brown. She was a single mom with a 13-year-old daughter. She ended up passing away. She was testing workers inside her facility, and, you know, they only opened her door to 6 weeks of counseling. This is a girl who's not going to see her mom ever again. She's only 13, you know. So she only has her aunt and her grandmother, and, you know, it's sad to hear that these workers are not being cared of, and especially with me with a medical issue, that shows that this company only puts profit over people. And I took that stance where I wasn't going to risk my life to go back to work and, you know, catch COVID.
Did you find in the course of organizing in both warehouses that people who had some peripheral experience like you did with a union, your mom's union, were more open to the idea of a union? I mean, I guess what I'm asking on some level is, like, is there value in just educating people as to what unions are and do, even if they don't need it at the moment, because ultimately at one point they may be in a situation where somebody comes up and says, we're organizing it. And if it makes people more open and more easily organized into a union.
Yeah, I mean, you seen how fast they were getting union buses in these facilities. So again, it was communicating with workers. Again, a lot of these workers are my age and a little higher, and they don't know what union is. And even if they do, they think it's a bunch of other things that goes on behind the scenes. But again, a union is a group of workers that came together to help protect their workers. Again, being with worker led, we understand what's going on in Amazon facilities, and we already demanded these changes. So it was more so educating the workers that we're here to protect them, instead of that they're hearing about union dues that Amazon's slandering about. That they even told workers that they had to pay $100 union fee. That's never been heard of. So these are little tactics that Amazon was doing, but again, it was more so that they're brainwashing these workers to just say no, just say no, just say no, and don't listen to them, instead of workers reaching out, which is, again, where we would come in and stand out for the workers, which we have been doing, serving them food, giving T-shirts, just communicating with these workers again. Because, again, me, Chris, Derek, and Gerald haven't been in the facility in almost, well, me, Chris, and Jerry haven't been in the facility in 3 years. My fault. Derek still works. These are all new workers that Amazon's firing and hiring. So it's another process that, as we're talking to some of these workers, Amazon's going to be firing them the next day. So it shows that we're standing at with the union, that we are organizing the fellow workers, that we are here to protect and not just here to take money. But again, it's the tactics that as fast as Amazon is telling them to vote no and all these bad lies about us, is the same way we're trying to as quickly tell them that we're not even, that's not even us.
So obviously, you're probably not interested in telling me the next location you're going to try and organize, because that's when Amazon sends all their consultants there and start their job. But in a more general sense, like, what do you guys do you have now a sort of new set of tactics and strategy that you have developed over the course of both winning and losing an election, and an idea of the profile of the place that you want to organize? And is that, are we just talking, Staten Island, or are we talking New York State, or are we talking the rest of the country?
Well, I mean, I can put it as that every state's union laws could be different. So, I mean, being that we did New York City, I mean, it's possible we are going upstate to help them out too, because again, they're still part of New York City, so they would have to still have the same union. So New York, yeah, we're going to continue expanding until we further anywhere else.
All right, sounds good. And are there? I mean, has there been, do you guys sit around and say, you know what, next time this is what we need to do differently? I mean, I imagine that you're learning as you go.
Yeah. Again, it's a learning experience with workers led. So we're just finding more ways to connect with workers. Again, we have barbecues. We give out T-shirts, keychains. That we're about to start our organizing classes, if they need help inside. So again, we are going to start training workers now, because again, the bigger the crowd, more pressure Amazon would have on them.
Is there a website or some place where our viewers can support you guys?
Yeah. So it's AmazonLaborUnion.org. You can follow us on Twitter, Amazon Labor Union. We have TikTok, we have Facebook. Follow Chris Malls, myself, Gerald, Derek, Angie. There's a bunch, but mainly ALU, the Amazon Labor Union, on Twitter and TikTok.
All right, so let me ask you this. I mean, I assume if there's some workers out there in a Amazon warehouse or facility anywhere in the country, you guys would encourage them, if they have questions about how to organize with you or on their own, to contact. But what would you also say to someone who's working in, I don't know, just some other type of a facility, and they is there some advice that you have for them? Are you guys open to saying, okay, you're not part of Amazon, maybe you're in a different sector than we are, it's not necessarily something that we're ready to formally get involved with, but here's some advice. Are you guys open to that type of thing as well?
So again, that would be the Congress of Essential Workers. We use that as an Amazon speaking voice, but we're going to continue on to speak to every other facility, any other store that needs help, that we'll give them the layout. And again, TCOEW consistently formed the walkout, that it don't has to be four. It could be a group of 10. It could be whoever, and whoever's working that day, whoever you with. Again, if you all want to make a change and make that decision, be that y'all solid team now, and y'all should, you know, coordinate with each other and make sure that everyone's on the same page. That, again, you know, you're taking on companies, not just Amazon. You know, we had Starbucks with this one in New York that, you know, these workers came together and walked out, and they closed and made a change. So it doesn't have to be a big group. It could be yourself. It could be a small group. It could be your friends. That, you know, as long as you put your mind to it and you stick to it, it's going to be a lot of hard work sticking thin, a lot of long days and long nights. But, you know, if you have a lot of self-investment in yourself, then you can get the work done.
Well, Jordan Flowers, really appreciate your coming on. We will put links to all the Amazon labor union links that you mentioned and the Congress of Essential Workers. Really appreciate the work you're doing, and good luck, and hope to talk to you again soon. We'll check in and on that. And sorry you didn't make it to the White House, but I hope this was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually a huge fan. I think you did Bob's Burgers. That's my favorite TV show.
Oh well, no, all right. Well, maybe we'll see if we get you the paraphernalia. Enjoy the movie. All right, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Thanks.
Right, have a good day, guys.
Bye-bye. There you go. The Hugo paying off.
I was
one
about
more
to
time.
Say, you got to do the yep. voice. You got to do the voice.
Yep. Well, hey, let's see if we can get Benjamin to send over some swag.
Oh, yeah, right.
Get Benjamin out there on the picket line.
I mean.
Doing some voices into a microphone?
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be massive.
Yeah. All right, folks. We're going to take a break and head into the fun half. Listen. Just got some feedback about the, as you know, we're splitting up the fun half these days from the first half on YouTube. The link is in the YouTube description. If you're watching on Roku, we now automatically fire the second half of the show if you're watching live.
Yeah, so we're testing a new feature by YouTube that should send you directly over to the fun half.
And let me make this clear. We're experimenting with things right now. We're trying to figure out, you know, we've talked in the past about sort of like this advertising situation that we had with our broker going to dynamic advertising and us not wanting to do that. And so it's inhibited some of the advertising revenue. Numbers are down across the board for the most part, unless you're doing anti-vax stuff on YouTube. And we were not.
Yet.
And, you know, there is a cyclical nature to these things. But and so if you have the means to become a member, please do at jointhemajorityreport.com. And we are updating the app, and we're going to get, you know, all the sort of the technical pieces together. As you've seen, we've upgraded our video quality, and we're playing around with some of that stuff, too. And we're just, you know, we're in the post-COVID era. I mean, even though COVID is still here and it is skyrocketing in New York City and around the country, but we're trying to just simply adjust some things. So, but again, if you're one of those people who do not have the financial means to get the fun half, and I never want this show to ever be a source of financial stress for anybody, ever. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put the words fun half in the members in the subject line, and we will work it out with you. No one will be excluded for money from the second half of the show. And we have members all the time go through some financial stress. We work it out for them. We will never lock anybody out of the show for money. Send us an email, and although I guess we, you know, the Boston show, you got to pay. That's
yes,
it's a live show. So in that instance,
it'd be difficult to coordinate.
It would be difficult to coordinate that. People have asked about, you know, what the requirements there. There will be a mask requirement, my understanding, at the at the Wilbur. And also, you got to be vaxxed or have had a negative test. I understand why.
Dystopia.
Yeah, it's total dystopia. So I just want to make that clear. You know, and so if you are, and I'm hoping, frankly, I'm hoping. There's some rumors that there are, like, you know, fans of other shows who are going to come and this and that. And I know they're hesitant to get vaccinated, but it'll be worth it for you to come and maybe we'll have, I don't know, we'll have a little bit of a debate.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see.
Live.
I'm willing to do
that. You like those libertarian calls?
Yeah, exactly.
We'll do it live.
How awesome would it be to have a 14-hour Wilbur show where the Wilbur management is, like, screaming at
me?
I'm like, wait. Just give me 1 second. This guy's claiming that, property rights were given by God, and that, but God doesn't exist.
Tenants are responsible for the structural integrity of their buildings.
Yeah, exactly. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY and get 10% off. And you also get the coffee blend. Yeah, somebody sent an old friend of mine. Goes, I just got somebody from Wisconsin just sent me Majority Report coffee. And Just Coffee is in Wisconsin.
Oh,
so
nice.
That was a surprise for them. And also, always don't forget the Discord. If you need anything from the program, resources, whatever it is, the folks in the Discord always there to help you out. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian Media Universe?
Yeah, really excited for folks to check out the interview with Robin Wansley on Left Reckoning tonight at 8 Central. She is an independent black socialist in Minnesota's Ward 2. And, you know, there's a lot of disappointment in Nina Turner loss, for instance, but there are actually good things happening. And Robin talks about how she decided to run for city council and decided to do it not seeking, like some other socialists in Minnesota, as the dual endorsement of the Democrats and the DSA. She ran purely independent and she won, and now she's able to say, like, call out Jacob Frey in a way that doesn't upset her running for re-election. So we talk about her. She's just insanely good. She was a Fight for 15 and teachers union organizer, and just a really inspiring person. So if you haven't checked out Left Reckoning before, I think this is one that we'd put on like a year-end best of list. So patreon.com/leftreckoning.
And, you know, when people run in that manner, it's not a question of, I don't want to be branded or affiliated this way. It is, I am creating an independent power base that at one point, and I'm not speaking for her at all, I'm just talking generically. At one point, it may make sense to run as a Democrat with that independent base, or maybe it doesn't. But the point is, that's the reason why you do it. It is not aesthetics.
Right.
It's not because it doesn't make you feel good or you don't like other people in the party.
Yeah, it's not theoretical. Like, I mean, Robin she has problems with Democrats. She grew up in Chicago and lived in Minneapolis, so she has problems there. But again, it's like she's working with the DSA members that and the progressive Democrats that are going to say, like, support something like, there's a lot of reaction against police reform at this moment now, but things like rent control and stuff like that, like, you need to work with those people. And then it's also nice to have a little bit of extra independence and build something outside of that. So check that out tonight.
And the best way to do that is on a local level and build, because
some people think the best way to do that is build on a local level. Some people think it's just to decry the pointlessness of electoralism on Twitter.
Well, those are two competing theories.
Yeah.
All right, folks, heading on to the fun half. We'll be right back after this. 646-257-3920 is the number. Am I forgetting anything? I don't think I am.
Nope.
All right. See you there.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
The Majority Report.
Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Boo.
What is up, everyone? Fun hack. Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun hack.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. Fun hack.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go for that
one. Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this. Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out.
I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.